Voices Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Strength Depositions. We're at the world-famous Strength Depot Gym in Plymouth, Michigan. I'm here with everybody. I'm here with Shane, Isa. It's me. Mike Folks is going to be joining us shortly. And we're sitting here with Corey Allen. Corey Allen, for those who don't know, he's a cancer survivor. He's got a really remarkable story, and he's kind enough to share it with us. And he's got a lot of... he does a lot of charity work, too. So what we want to do is we brought Corey on, and we want to let him tell his story, and maybe you all can help, too. So, Corey, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it, man.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm glad I can share my story and hopefully help some others in the process. So just to kick this thing off, kind of the reason why we're here, we just started a brand new nonprofit charity called Foundation for Strength back in May of this year. We've actually been running a golf outing in honor of my cousin who passed away from cancer in 2009 for the almost, it'll be the 10th annual next year. So anyone that's interested in golfing, a good time, come out next year, look at our site.
What's the site, Corey?
Plenty to do. Foundationforstrength.org. Or find us on Facebook or Instagram, Foundation, the number 4, Strength. So a little bit about what we do. Me going through the process of losing my cousin and also battling cancer myself, I've had the, I wouldn't say pleasure, but the experience of talking to many individuals going through cancer and sharing my story. And what I found was when I share my story with people, they can easily relate to me. When you go through something like cancer or some other similar disease, chemo, radiation, it breaks you down. You feel ostracized. You don't feel like you can connect with your family, your friends, or anybody. So to have somebody to talk to and just bullshit and just tell them your story and their story and swap war stories. And sometimes you laugh about it. Sometimes you cry about it. But people, I mean, having that connection is just amazing. And over the years, I've unfortunately had some of my family members, cousins, since my diagnosis, be diagnosed. But they battled the beast and were actually able to beat it. And I even had one time a couple parents come to me after the fact and thank me for sharing my story, because after these cancer warriors talked to me, they changed, their attitudes changed, they're upbeat, they felt like they were back in the picture. And it's also good to kind of be able to share a success story, you know, with all the negativity around in the world and chemo beating your ass, it really takes a toll on your body and your mind. And if you don't have the right mindset, you're not going to be able to beat the beast. So, back on track here, Foundation for Strength, that's exactly what we want to do. We want to provide strength to those individuals emotionally and financially in any capacity we can. So, we have 5 pillars of what we kind of go by. One, we do a scholarship in honor of my cousin. We give it out to a cancer warrior that is battling or has battled cancer that personifies what strength is. Two, we do a cancer eradication fund. So we basically pick a different research fund every year, try to diversify it. We like to get to know the funds and the doctors and the people actually doing the work so that we understand that the fund's actually doing some good out there. And we like to change it up because there's so many different types of cancer. We don't want to focus on one. I know I'd be biased to sarcoma because that's what I had and that's what my cousin had, but we don't want to be biased because cancer isn't biased. Three, we do a family fund, which can really be anything, and it's probably one of my favorites, is that we just go out and if a kid wants to go to a sporting event or travel somewhere or want some toys or maybe their house needs a new AC unit, you know, we'll go out, we'll get the funds, there's no set amount, and we'll just try to go help the family out, you know, try to give them that emotional boost to the whole family, make them feel good again. The fourth one is the partner fund, which is another fun one. We work with different businesses out there. We connect with them. We try to get them motivated to fundraise, because that's my whole story as I get into it. Fundraising, if we get more people fundraising, the more money will be out there to help more people. And that's the whole goal here, is providing strength for everybody. So we work with businesses to get them to start fundraising. Maybe they've had a family member or somebody that's been through cancer, and they want to help them or start their own fund, but they don't want to start a nonprofit. So basically we work with them, we partner with them, and they get to funnel their funds through us, and we actually donate dollar for dollar the first $1,000 of every partner fund that we do. So we that's how we partner, is we believe in what they want to do by giving them $1,000 to start us off, and we want them to succeed just as much as we want to succeed, because if we all succeed, then hopefully cancer won't be here anymore. And the fifth and final one's a obvious fun one. It's the Magical Christmas Fund. So we work with local hospitals. We're going to spread it out nationally too, to provide Christmas for kids battling cancer. We've even played with the idea of doing maybe a Christmas in July, just because there's a lot of funds happening in December time frame. So we play with the idea of switching it over to a different month, so that, you know, not, you know, cancer is not just secluded to December. You know, sometimes you're struggling in July and you might want a present too. So that's what Foundation for Strength is. And you're going to see a lot of fun, hopefully fun and strength providing videos coming out here on social media. We got some awesome warriors that we're very excited to support in these upcoming weeks. So stay tuned. It's going to be awesome.
Hey, Corey, if people want to donate, if people want to get involved, if people want to, like, you know, put their money towards something in a positive way, we just have Mike Folks walk in, too, so Mike's with us as well. But if people want to get involved in this and donate money to such an amazing cause, how should they do it?
Absolutely good question. I probably should have touched on that first. But you can go to our website. We have, like, 100 donation links all over the site, because that's what we want people to do, is donate. We have a donation link in our Instagram profile. And we also have a donate button on our Facebook page. And if none of that works, maybe you're not social friendly, we take checks. We can get an address out there somewhere. Drop it off at Strength Depot. We'll take cash, check, whatever you need. We're trying to be as open as possible, because the more money we have, the more money we can help with. So.
How much money have, like, in this process, like, how much money have you been able to raise while you've been, like, in the last several years?
So, as an example, and I'll tell my story in a couple minutes here, but in 2015, when I powerlifted, I did 3 different meets, and just by myself, I raised over $25,000 in 2015. But every year at my cousin's golf outing that we do, we usually bring in about $10,000 every year. And in my previous company that we raised money for, we would raise, you know, another 10 or so thousand every year as well. So I couldn't compile the number, but it's got to be close to $100,000 since I've been diagnosed. So, the money is actually just a side gig. I think the emotional strength is the bigger one. It's the biggest winner out of them all. Seeing these kids and these people, all these thank you messages that I get are just, it's so uplifting. It changes your life. You know, and it's awesome.
Corey, can you tell me about, like, you mentioned your cousin. First off, what was your cousin's name? And two, can you tell me a little background on him? And tell me the story, because it's an incredible story.
Absolutely. So my cousin's name was Brett Johnston. He was 5 years older than me. We were best friends from day one. And I say best friends, but he was basically my role model. He was 5 years older than me, and we got videos even when we were younger. I was 2 years old, and he was 7, and we were hanging out, right? So we just had this special connection. Video games, whatever it was, we just did all the dumb stuff together. And he's that type of guy that has the personality that everybody loves. I mean, for example, at his funeral, he had people, just hundreds and hundreds of people pouring in. The kid was 25 years old when he passed away, and he had all these people just pouring in. And I was like, how did he know so many people? And then I'm thinking, you know what, it took 2 minutes, and you felt like you were his best friend, right? He's the guy at a party that would want to go talk to the grandma in the corner, not talking to anybody. He'd actually want to find out her stories, and he'd come back and be like, guys, get over here. I mean, did you hear the story? What she did 30 years ago? That's amazing, you know? So he was that guy. You know, he had that spark to him, and he was like the glue to my entire family. I came from a family of, I got four aunts, my mom, and six aunts and uncles total, 22 cousins. So we had a big family on my mom's side. We always did big Christmases, big Easters. We were always very close-knit family, and he was definitely one of the key pieces, or the key piece to keep everyone together, because people would come there, and you want to see Brett. You know, like, well, where's Brett? I want to talk to him. You know, he's going to light up my day or my year, you know, so... me and Brett were workout partners, and we loved to work out. I started working out in high school when I was playing soccer. I was maybe a buck 30. I used to run long distance and play soccer, so that's all I did. Then I started getting into lifting, and I was like, man, this is cool. I like doing this stuff.
Still a lot better than fucking running.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you that. I don't know if I can run now. Probably not. But after I got out of high school, me and him started lifting, and you know, we were kind of taking each other's advice and kind of BSing around. That was my learning phase. You know, I was 19, 20, pushing weight, doing stuff, having fun. And one day in January 2009, he was complaining. He always used to complain, you know, to me. And I was always the guy that's like, all right, dude, suck it up. Let's go. Another set, another rep. Let's do it. And he's like, man, I got this bump on my hip. He's like, I can't do these sit-ups today. And I'm like, quit being a big baby. Grow up. And let's go. And he's like, dude, it's got to be a hernia. I go, all right, go get it checked out. Let's get it, you know, let's get it done and you get back in the gym. So sure enough, he went and got it checked out. And our worst fears came true. They found out he had rhabdomyosarcoma. And I wish I never knew what that even meant or was. What a name for cancer. But it's rhabdomyosarcoma is one of the 50-plus different kinds of the sarcoma cancer. Sarcoma cancer is mainly a bone cancer, but it's also soft tissue. So I learned a lot about this stuff going through this. But from there on out, he was officially diagnosed February 6, 2009. And they found out that he had the cancer metastasized to his lungs. And they basically were like, do what you got to do. They didn't even give him a chance. And I'll tell you what, this guy, I mean, he was 25. And this guy, I mean, this is the epitome of strength. This is what I really learned what strength is about, that it's not just physical, that it's not just emotional, that it's not just spiritual. It's mental. You know, it's all these together that make who a human being is all around. And this guy, that you know, everyone writ him off. All the doctors like, good luck, you know, we had no idea. So the whole family, we're just praying like, hey, man, you're going to get better. You're young, you're this and that. And man, I watched this guy literally, I mean, because his lungs were filling with fluid. So I would watch him sleep and he'd literally be drowning in his own breaths. And then he'd wake up and barely able to breathe. And he'd look at me and be like, hey, man, what's going on? What are we going to do today? And I'm like, are you kidding me? Serious? Like, I mean, I was 20 years old, so I couldn't fathom. I didn't even know what this was. I couldn't even fathom death. 20 years old is when you're immortal, right? Like, you think you could go to a club and beat somebody up or
jump lift off a roof.
Yeah, you didn't care. You're immortal, but I mean, this was definitely the mortal thing to me. And you know, less than a month later, he passed away. He passed away March 5th. So we didn't even have time to cope. He was actually in the ICU for a week and a half, passed out. We had him sedated. And I was there with his family, his mom, dad, sister, brother, and me. We watched him take his last breaths as they took him off the respirator. And I'll never forget that day. It was still the hardest day of my life, watching my best friend, my cousin, my idol, not be there anymore. I mean, I still can't fathom it. Like, I don't believe it. You know, you just look at it and you're like, how did that just happen? So, at 20 years old, I couldn't believe it. And my aunt asked me to speak at his funeral. And so I'm a couple days after that at his funeral speaking. And I look out and we're at Northridge Church. And anyone that's been there is a huge church. That place was literally packed. Family, friends, people. And I was like, wow, public speaking in high school, you know, hopefully this, you know, got me ready for that. You know, I was like, crap, I've never spoken to 400 or 500 plus people in my life. And I couldn't tell you how the speech went, but I still have the note cards from that suit to today. I look at them sometimes and I just kind of look back and I try to do them right. So matter of fact, while he was going through chemo, the 1 month he did, I had this pain in my leg, and I was telling him, I'm like, Brett, my leg is killing me. I can't walk up the stairs. And he looked back at me. He's got a cane. And he's got just had surgery on his hip. He goes, you can't walk up the stairs? Guy can't breathe. And I'm over like, dude, yeah. It hurts. You know, he's like, Corey, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be okay. And he always would say these things to me. And like, he would drop these hints, you know, like he was like teaching me and I didn't know. And I'd always look at him like, what's going on? Like, you know something I don't know, you know? And he knew, like, the whole time I look back at it now and I know he knew that he was already going to go. But he literally had called, and not to jump around the story, but he literally called ex-girlfriends, friends, people he knew in his whole life. He called them over to make his peace with them. I mean, at 25 years old, who does that? You know, you're battling cancer and you're calling your friends and your ex-girlfriends over and telling them, it's going to be okay. Whatever happened in the past, we're good. You know, nobody does that. I wouldn't have done it.
It's a maturity beyond.
Yeah, I mean, this is just who he was, man. And it's who I always try to be. I don't think I'll ever be him. But it was amazing, right? And so anyways, he passed away and we spoke at his funeral. And I was sitting there with my legs still hurting. And I went and played a basketball game at the rec center. And I don't know, right after I finished, my leg hurt so bad that I couldn't get up. People had to carry me off the court into my car and get me home. And I'm like, okay, I must have tore something or something real bad happened in my leg. Because I mean, I could play on it, but something was going on. And when you push down on it, there was a bump. You could feel this bump. And I was like, I mean, I had some pretty big quads at the time, but you still had to kind of push through the muscle and you could feel it. And I was like, man, there's a bump. That's weird.
Did the bump move? Was it movable?
You could move it slightly. It was just so deep that it was hard to kind of figure out what was going on. I'm like, is that a muscle? Is that a... What's going on? So, went to the doctor three weeks after my cousin, speaking at my cousin's funeral, and sure enough, I was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma. So, not rhabdomyosarcoma, Ewing sarcoma, but still one of the 50 rare types of cancer. And to my knowledge, Ewing sarcoma is... there's 625 diagnoses a year. So, I mean... You get a better chance of winning the lottery, pretty much. Come to find out as well, it wasn't a hereditary thing. Sarcomas are not. So this wasn't just some bad luck of the draw from genes. This was just a bad luck of the draw with life, you know. And I knew when I got diagnosed that my family was just going to be in pieces. We were already torn apart because we lost Brett. Brett was the glue to our family. And all I could think was, and I think the doctor gave me a percentage. I think they said I had a 75% chance to live or something like that. And I was like, shit, that's better than Brett. What? I can't complain. I'm thinking of him walking up the stairs, and I was complaining. I'm like, well, I got no complaints. 75%, that's a passing grade in school, right? I mean, sure. So, I mean, I kept that mentality, and I think it actually, to be honest, going through my chemo and surgery and stuff like that, it actually helped me. Because I didn't have to cope with him passing yet. I had to focus on beating the cancer and being strong for my family. So I had to do one of the most intense chemos that's out there, which was 40 hours a week, every other week, 1 week on, 1 week off. And I actually celebrated my
40 hours?
Yeah, so...
I'll say that again. So, I mean, I complain about working 40 hours a week. So 40 hours of chemo per week.
Yeah, so that was a mixture of getting the right fluids and getting the chemo. Some of the chemos didn't take that much time, but I was in the hospital for 40 hours a week. So I had a full-time job. I got to know, you know, people in the hospital. And U of M is a big hospital, but I know it hand and foot now, you know, wherever you need to go. But I'd always get to, you know, and this is kind of like a bad joke, I guess you could say, but, you know, I'd see people coming in the chemo ward once every 3 weeks for 1 hour, and I'd be sitting there, and I'd be like, lucky, you know. I mean, just looking at my situation, not that you're lucky, yeah. But to me, I'm like, hey, the only good part about being there for 40 hours a week is they'd give me a room and a bed, and I kind of get to camp out of myself. Everyone else had to kind of be in the general pub area. But so I did, started in April, right on, I think April 2nd was my first day of chemo. And I had a tumor the size of a pop can in my quad.
April 2nd, what year again?
2009.
Okay.
So it was the size of a pop can. So, you know, there's pictures on my Instagram and things like that. You could see how big this tumor was. And the goal was to shrink it down and then to cut it out. So July 7th was my surgery. It actually, the chemo worked beautifully. It cut it, shrunk it down to a pencil, size of a pencil. I had Ewing's, which is typically a bone cancer, but it was in my soft tissue and it was eating away at my bone. So basically, it shrunk down to a pencil. They went in and operated. They cut out pretty much half my leg. They cut out a piece of my bone. They put a cadaver bone in, a metal plate, and 8 screws. And I actually just posted this the other day on my Instagram, the stitches right after the surgery, you know, and that's the crazy thing is they told me, and I'll get to later on in my story, but they told me I wasn't even going to be able to run again, you know. So, like, that's how serious the surgery was, is I didn't have my leg, you know, good luck trying to rehab. And so after surgery, I was in a wheelchair for, bedridden for a month, and then I was in a wheelchair for a couple months, too.
You took out an entire quad muscle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like a quad and a half, but I'll just say a quad, you know, call it even, you know, biggest triceps in, you know, Wayne County. Yeah. Thanks for humoring my joke. So that was, and then after going through surgery and then did rehab, I was in a wheelchair, two crutches, to a cane. Rehab went beautifully.
How long was that progression, Corey?
That was from July all the way up until my last chemo, which was the end of November. And man, I look at pictures now and I thought I was doing great. You know, I was like, I had this mentality of like, nothing's going to break me, nothing's going to break me. And I hold that still today, but I look at pictures of me and I'm like, oh my God, I look terrible. I mean, I look awful. And I'm like, how did everyone else feel around me, you know?
And you just recently posted a picture, didn't you? Or maybe you just texted it to me, but where you're in the chemo.
Oh, yeah.
You'd lost all your hair, thumbs up, kind of right. Kind of very pale. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I try to post those sometimes. I don't know if I posted it or I might have just sent it to you, Shane, but...
Corey, give us your Instagram so people can see, or and your Facebook page so people can actually see some of these pictures.
Yeah, my Instagram page is Hardcore Allen, but there's no E in the hardcore because there's no E in my name.
Get it? Yeah, I gotcha.
So I don't need to spell it out for hopefully people, but Hardcore Allen.
No numbers?
No numbers.
You're the only Hardcore Allen.
Yeah,
I'm not
right? Even
the same, the only Shane Train, which is looking right. Got it.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, war got it soon enough, I guess, right? So the reason why it's hardcore, too, is we made shirts for my cousin, big bright orange shirts, strength, you know, because that was what he personified to us. So that kind of started this T-shirt kick. And then for my battle, they made Live Hardcore shirts, which a lot of people always confuse with Live Hardcore, and they think they're reading a band shirt or something like that. But it was a cool way that we realized that helped people. They didn't know how to support, you know, and I realized that when you're going through a battle and stuff like that, people never know how to support. So it's like, hey, we got these wristbands or we got these T-shirts, and people are like, sweet. Now I can channel that every day. I still have my original strength shirt from Brett, and I wear that sometimes. It's starting to get real beat up, but I love wearing that stuff. I mean, I wear that through my surgery and stuff like that, and I got stories and stories and stories about chemo and surgeries that, you know, will make you laugh and make you cry, but I'm not going to go too deep into that. You know, maybe we can go around two later on, but moving on to the future, after I was finished in remission, I decided that I was going to change my life. I love lifting. I actually was doing P80 when I was going through chemo.
You run a PA school?
P80. You ever hear about that?
Oh,
that
yeah,
beach
yeah.
body thing?
Yeah.
So I was doing that just to, you know, because I couldn't make it in the gym and I knew I shouldn't lift. And I was literally popping Tums because of the acid reflux from the chemo. So after a couple of weeks of that, I kind of looked at my girlfriend, but wife now, I was like, yeah, that's probably not a good idea. And she's like, I could have told you that, but you had to realize it. And so after I finished, I was like, you know what? I want to feel good again. I hate feeling like crap. So for 6 months, I went on a strict diet. I mean, I actually posted something the other day about before and after 6 months, too, and got lean, felt great, and I was like, man, life is good. So that was in 2010, and then I enjoyed life for a while. And then in the end of 2012, Brett's brother, Scott, came to me, and we were kind of talking about, you know, some business ideas and things like that, and I mentioned how the shirts, the strength shirts and the Live Hardcore shirts just kind of rallied everyone behind us. So we decided to start a company called CancerTees.com, and it wasn't a nonprofit. But what we decided to do, so we didn't have to do paperwork or things like that, is we just donated money. We just find a warrior and we would get their story out there. We'd meet them. Each warrior we would raise $500 for. So basically we would just cut profits off the top, pay taxes on that $500, and just give them money. And we did a whole bunch of events and we did a whole bunch of different things. And I'm blessed for that opportunity too, because I got to travel a little bit. I actually went down to a celebrity golf outing to speak about sarcoma. It was a charity for sarcoma down in Florida for SIDES organization, which is an amazing organization in itself. And I've done a couple other speeches too from that. And that was a beautiful experience, and that actually got me into the fundraising game, which leads me to 2015. So I was doing Cancer Tees for about 3 years, meeting some amazing people. And then actually into 2014, I kind of was feeling like some kind of itch to do something, and powerlifting came across to me, and people were like, you know, you should try this thing. You're pretty strong. You should do this. Because I've always trained in the gym. I've always been a gym rat. I've lifted since I was 15 years old, and I love it, you know. And so I kind of did my own cycle. I talked to one of my buddies who was doing powerlifting, and they kind of gave me, hey, do this and that. And so I trained my butt off for 6 months, and it was a meet in March. And then come end of January, I decided, hey, you know what? I want to raise money for kids with cancer, you know. I mean, how cool is that someone's going to go out there and powerlift, lift a ton of weight, and I'm missing a whole piece of my leg, you know what I mean? I get in a singlet, you could see my scar from knee to crotch, you know, and I was like, let's do it for some kids. And I thought I was going to raise like a couple hundred bucks. I mean, I only had a month to raise money, and I raised over $6,000, and that's when I realized, what am I doing with Cancer Tees? I can raise a ton more money just found, you know, getting polarizing things. So that whole year, like I said, I raised over $25,000 doing a couple different meets, including Relentless, which is amazing in itself. And I raised for Relentless, I think I raised a little over $11,000. I got the Connor Strong Award, which I still have. It's a fireman helmet. I got that in my house. Amazing kid. He reminded me so much of Brett. And I think that's what got me connected with Relentless too, is that he just connected with so many levels. And I never actually met Connor. I just saw videos and photos and all the people being connected with him. He was just that kid, that polarizing figure that matched up so much to Brett. And for those of you who don't know, and I know I think they're going to touch on it later in the show, but Relentless is a powerlifting meet put on by some amazing individuals that they raise like $200,000 a year for families, and it's awesome. And they do it in Detroit, and they do it in Minnesota. But yeah, so that was my powerlifting experience. I kind of beat up my body that year. And then the following year, actually during that year, it was the following year, me and my wife decided that we wanted to try for a kid. And being on chemo, the chemo I was on, I actually had to store sperm. And there's a whole funny story about that thing, which I'll go into later. But I had sperm stored.
I'm immature, so I laughed at it already.
Because the doctor said I probably wouldn't be able to have kids. You know, the odds are, you know, you're not going to... I mean, they already told me I couldn't run. Yeah. And I totally skipped over what I did in March. But that $6,000 I raised, I did a pound for pound thing. I skipped right over this. I broke a national record in the deadlift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is just, I guess this is who I am. I'm more worried about the money and the kids than the records and stuff like that. But it was an amazing thing because it kind of polarized a lot of people and realized, wow, this guy's lifting a good amount of weight, doing some great things and raising a ton of money. So
what was it, Corey? Like, what did you deadlift at?
I was 198, 7'11".
Yeah, but the one thing about it is you're not just a survivor, you're persevering. There's a difference between surviving and persevering. And right. So I think that's a great thing for other people who may be going through what you're going through to see.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And that's such a great point. That's kind of what I now, after doing this, I didn't even realize I was going to. My goal was to break some state records and just kind of have some fun with it and raise some money. But I went out there and broke a national record. And I truly believe that my cousin Brett's got my back, whether it's through cancer, whether it's through what I do. And I guess another thing too is I do this powerlifting stuff, and I get complaints sometimes, but if my leg breaks, if I even fracture part of my leg, they got to cut off my right leg. So that's something I always consider as well. But it's something I love to do.
We've talked about that a couple times on the air. We've said, you know, like, it's part of us. Like, lifting's part of us, and would we, if... You know, if we were going to get hurt, if we were going to seriously get injured, yeah, we would shorten our life, or we would, you know, get hip injuries, would we do it?
Right.
And, you know, every one of us said we'd do it somehow.
Right.
You know?
But, yeah, and that's kind of
where... And you proved it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am, too, is, like, I've realized, and what I tell myself is the impact sport, so running, and jumping and things like that I can't do, because those are more dangerous to shattering my leg. But, you know, powerlifting and squatting 700 pounds and deadlifting over 700 pounds and stuff like that's good for my leg, I guess.
But is powerlifting something that you and Brett had discussed while you were training together, or were you more just training?
Me and Brett, actually, we were doing kind of bodybuilding type stuff, but we were just trying to get strong. We like just pushing weight around and having fun in the gym. Like I said, I mean, it took me 6 years from after the chemo to actually get into powerlifting. And I probably got to tip my hat to Big Nick Gout. He was kind of into powerlifting, and he was my training buddy. We kind of look funny. There's some photos out there. You should see us. I look like a kid next to him. You know, the guy's 6'5", 300 pounds, and I'm over here, you know. But we always have some fun doing that stuff.
Yeah, so Corey and I kind of pretty much have the same type of physique. And so it's funny when you, like, if I'm walking near somebody, I don't feel short until I see a fucking reflection. Yeah. And then I'm like, ah, Jesus, I'm a hobbit. Yeah. So, So you broke a national record in deadlift. Where do you see yourself going from here? Like, are you... You've been dealing with injuries and whatnot, you said, and you haven't been lifting quite like you normally do.
Yeah.
What's next for you? Are we going to see Corey Young compete again?
That's the question of the week from last week, I guess. So maybe. That's definitely a possibility. I've kind of realized that, especially with this foundation, I want to get our name out there. We want to help so many people, and polarizing the environment with, you know, someone that's deadlifting 700, 800 pounds, who knows? I don't know what I have in me still, but I'm young, so, yeah. You know, why not? You know, my body was kind of breaking down on me, and going back to a previous point, you know, we weren't supposed to have a kid, and we got blessed this year. My wife had a baby 3 months ago, Tenley Jean. She's a beautiful baby girl.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'm absolutely blessed. I've done so much in my life. I'm still here. You know, I persevered the odds. Cancer didn't come back on me. I broke a national record in a deadlift. I raised a ton of money for kids, and I still am. And I got a little girl, and I think that trumps it all. I got an awesome wife, too. I got to give her a plug because she's amazing. But, yeah, that's amazing.
I just wanted to know who had the bigger deadlift, me or you. I forgot. It's been a while since I've seen you.
Raw?
I'm just saying, just bigger deadlifts in general, you know. Because nobody asks Raw. They just ask bigger deadlift.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Let's put me in some equipment. Let's see. Give me what? What do I need? 2 weeks?
Those fighting words.
He said, put me in some equipment. What do I need? 2 weeks?
Oh, jeez.
You only got to get, 30 pounds out of your equipment to beat JJ, right?
So, yeah. What's his deadlift? I don't even know. I don't, did they write an article on him?
Haymakers.
Was he in Power magazine? Was that the magazine?
So. Yeah, I was in Power. Yeah.
So just real quick, congratulations on the baby. There's really nothing like having kids. And, like, you know, if anybody's heard any of the podcasts from here, you know, when we talk about our kids, we all get emotional because we all have kids.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, there's really nothing like it. How has that impacted, like, everything that you went through? Like, so. You went through your brother pass, or your basically your brother, but yeah. Your cousin passing, and then you went through cancer, and then you're fighting, and you're doing all this stuff for charity, and now all of a sudden you have this little beacon of hope, and this just little, like, how does it change your perspective?
I mean, I can't even put it into words. It's amazing. I mean, it really puts into perspective, like, what these parents go through every day when their kids get diagnosed, because that's all I think about now is, like, yeah. Oh, man, don't go through this. Don't let her get hurt. I mean, she's my world, right? So it's just, you know, she's everything. And but it definitely kind of makes me want to, you know, show her that, you know, dad can still do some things. So, you know, I'm kind of getting the itch to lift again. And not that I don't lift, but, you know, power lift and kind of show her that, you know, there's a lot of good in the world, you know, because there's a lot of evil and stuff like that. But you're definitely a lot more aware. You know, I life is such a blessing. And so many people don't take it for granted. They take it for granted. You try to live every day. My cousin's quote, and I get it wrong every time. I just posted about it. But he always used to say, open your eyes today like you've never opened them before. Because everything should be new and awesome, you know. And that's what he would talk to people about. I mean, his dad is still, he's such an amazing guy. My uncle Doug, he always talks to everybody. And that's where I think Brett got it. And it's just that personality. It's like you always want to help people. And my family's, I thank them every day, too, is because they always have my back on all these adventures that I do with charities and fundraisers and things like that. But it is the coolest thing to hopefully show my daughter that, you know, the world's a good place and dad can do some pretty cool stuff. And, you know, hopefully it changes who she is, too, and she can kind of realize that as well.
You know, it's funny, like, you know, are you going to be training at Strength Depot from now on? Is this going to be your primary gym? Just asking, Corey, you know.
Wow, he's asking the directed questions. I don't know. I've been at my other gym, and I won't plug another gym yet. But I've been at my other gym since 2007. I joined that gym with Brett. So it's an emotional thing for me. I've actually done some other gyms on the other side. So I've done two gyms. I've done Strength Depot on the side as well when I was training. So doing a second gym or two gyms might be a possibility. But, you know, training and, like, the gym is like a piece for me. You know, I got so much crazy stuff in my head. I hold a lot of weight in my head. When I met all these warriors, I meet these families and these warriors, and, you know, you think all the positive stuff, but then when they pass away, you met them and you own that, and you had that weight. And I relive that every single day, and I don't know why I do it, but I live it every single day when I meet somebody new and they're going through it, and I see them pass away, and it just brings me right back to my cousin. You know, that's the toughest thing for me.
You know,
and that was one of the things when when talking with Alicia, who you and I both known pretty well. She's seen so many kids like go through chemo, and I always look at her as strength, not just because of what she's been through, but how she's seen best friends and kids that are 12, 13 years old going through chemo and then passing away. I'm like, holy cow, I get emotional just talking. Here she is, like, talking to these kids, and here we go, lost another friend. And I'm like, holy shit, like, how do you deal with stuff like that? So it's tough. I mean, you want to go out and help these kids, but at the same time, you know, there's a chance.
Well, the minute you get to know them, you start to have, you know, appreciate them as a person and know intimate things about them. That's, I think, where it makes it difficult. We all know people get sick, kids get sick, but then you start to know them personally. That's what gets me.
See, like, I don't know if you know this, Corey, but I'm an RN. Okay. So I'm a nurse, and I work in a cardiovascular ICU. So I've worked many areas of the hospital, but it's always been intensive care or ER. And I've seen people pass, and, like, I've seen people where, I mean, I have a million stories, too.
Yeah.
We had this, the thing that put into perspective for me, like, the direty of my job was there was this little girl, and I'll say her name. Her name was Sam, and Sam was 17. And Sam had Wilson's disease, and Wilson's disease is it's your body, your liver cannot, like, metabolize copper anymore, so your liver fails. It's a recessive trait, so one in a fucking million people have it, and then the other one in a million person has to have kids in order to have this. So it was just awful. So I was probably a nurse 6 months, and, like, so this little girl, Sam, comes in, and she's not doing well. So they're trying to get her a liver transplant, It's not doing well. So I leave. I think Sam's going to pass. And I'm trying to deal with it as a, you know, it's only 6 months in. And so when I come back, her dad was a massive man. I don't know if he was a powerlifter. I don't know what he was, but six something. Out of nowhere, as I'm walking in, he's in the hall, and he grabs me, and he gives me this big-ass hug, picks me off the air, and he's like, "We got a fucking liver for Sam. We got a fucking liver, Chuck." And the mom gives me this hug and a kiss, and she's like, "Thank you for everything you did for my daughter." So Sam is not doing well at this point. The transplant was waiting for, like, it was going to be at 3 o'clock in the morning. The transplant team comes in at maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, and, like, just, you know, whatever. And they say, "Hey, you remember that liver? Hey, I'm sorry, it's not viable. Too bad." So now this family has all this hope that they're going to get a liver transplant and Sam's going to make it. Now she's going septic. And so the family was like, "Do you have a priest anywhere on board?" I don't know why I'm telling you this, but this just touched me. The family said, "Hey, do you guys got a priest on board? It's like 4 o'clock in the morning." We didn't have a priest. Like, we don't have a priest on staff at night. So I'm like, fuck this. I Googled everybody in Detroit. I found somebody. I found Father Dan, and I think he's in the Archdiocese of Detroit, and they wanted a Catholic priest. So Father Dan said he would come up. So he's coming up. He's driving there. Sam codes. So if you've ever seen a kid go into, or anybody go into something called DIC, disseminated intravascular coagulation. What it is you're clotting and bleeding at the same time. So I'm coding this little girl, Sam, and I see this fucking stuffed animal by her head. And it's been 8 years, and I can't get that fucking stuffed animal out of my head. So I'm coding this girl, compressing, and the stuffed animal is going up and down and up and down. And finally the priest comes, and he didn't make it in time. So he anointed the body and whatnot. And it pissed me off because we didn't have clergy. So I wrote, I'm a six-month nurse. And I wrote a letter to the fucking CEO of the whole hospital. And I was like, you know, you say we're supposed to be one of the best institutions in the country. And, you know, we're supposed to have everybody's care, physical, cognitive, and spiritual care involved. And you guys don't have, any spiritual care at night. People don't die from 9 to 5 on Monday through Friday. They die all the time. And I said, we have an affiliation now with the Catholic priest. But what about the Jew who needs a rabbi? Or what about all these different, all this spiritual care that needs to be taken? And it reminded me about what you're doing with your organization and your foundation, because it's not just the physical side, it's the family coping and everybody trying to come together. So I don't know why I told you that story. I just still to this day remember Sam. Yeah. And I've seen so many people pass from, hundreds. I've seen so many people pass. And I think as a nurse, you try and put it into a little compartment, but I swear to God, every time something hits you and all of that comes out at one time. Yeah. And I honest to God, I try and compartmentalize, but I think if I were to compartmentalize completely, then I'd lose my humanity. Yeah. And I don't ever want to do that. Right. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know why I told you that story. I see it all the time, and I see these families that struggle so much, and I hear, if you've ever heard a mother's grief, the sound of somebody dying, a mother's child dying, and you hear that sound, you never fucking forget it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't even know where I'm going with this. Right. I just know that that spark that I see in you for cancer, I definitely can relate.
Absolutely.
I mean, so. But, and the other thing I wanted to say is, with you being at Strength Depot, or let's say a secondary type, third, tertiary type gym, I think it's awesome because, we have Shane Rickman and Tina here.
Yeah.
And Shane and Tina do so much for charity, whether it be Relentless, whether it be, for Alicia, whether it be for dogs, whether it be, and, I said, I'm an RN, and, I try and do as much good as I can. But I really wasn't that active into charity, or really wasn't that aware of what I should be doing. Right. Until I came to this gym. And I mean, I owe you that, Shane.
Right.
I don't know. I think everybody should try and help people better off than themselves.
And to tie it in and vouch for Corey's Foundation for Strength, last week we did a little girl that Corey and I actually met at a Tigers game. We took Elisa to a Tigers game a couple years ago. Hope Sovran was there. And she did, through Wish Upon a Teen out of Birmingham, she wanted to decorate hospital rooms for kids who were in extended stay. And it was her 21st birthday. She wanted to decorate 21 rooms. So I did a donate your birthday through Facebook. All the money goes to the Wish Upon a Teen. And Corey stepped right up and said, I'll match all donations today up to $500. And of course, we raised. I think I raised $1,200 that day, and Corey brought $500 in. So, his foundation does step up to the plate, and we actually through them we're going out August 11th and to DMC Hospital and decorating with that money that we raised, decorating some of the hospital rooms for the kids. And Hope came in last Tuesday with her mom, and Corey presented her with the check. And Hope gave everybody a hug, and you could just see, look around the room, and you could see all these big meatheads with their eyes welled up, and Hope gave them all a big hug and kind of invited everybody out, and everybody's been chomping at the bit ever since. When are we going? So I think we're going to have a pretty big group out there, and I think, Corey, you're going with us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be there, and I think that's the big thing, too, is we're not just cancer as well. Obviously, Hope's thing is kids with life-threatening diseases out there. We specifically call out cancer because that's something that we've all been through and we know. But we're always willing to help others. And that's the big thing, too. And like I mentioned before, the Partner Fund and all these other fundraisers is the fact, like you mentioned, Shane does all these fundraisers. It's getting people involved, you know. It's getting more fundraisers out there. It's having people understand because I'll tell you what, you might be helping the family. You might think that you're the one helping them, but they're really the ones helping you, 100%. I tell you what, every single one of my powerlifting meets, I did it for kids with cancer. I called it out specifically to somebody else, and it means so much more. I mean, that's when I lift too. That's what I think about as I run that stuff through my head. Is who am I lifting for? I'm lifting for Brett. I know who's behind me. I know every single lift that I do. That's where my peace is at, is that I'm actually doing it for a reason. And it's nice to kind of have a reason behind everything. And I've heard a lot of relentless lifters in general say that stuff too when they lift for relentless. Is there's meaning behind it. It's not just for you. Of course, you're doing it for you, but it's such an amazing thing. And we want to get more fundraisers out there.
I remember, cancer has touched my family, who I've talked about on the podcast several times, my grandfather who raised me and, you know, pretty much made me who I am. Like, if I'm one millionth of the person that my grandfather was, then I'll be considered a success. But, like, he had worked in Great Lakes Steel, and he worked in the cranes, and he acquired asbestos-related mesothelioma. And so, like, I remember, like, he was living in Florida, and he was driving him fucking self to chemo every day, driving himself to it, and then driving back. And I don't know if I told the story on the air. Did I tell the story about him? All right, so he was on the air, and not on the air. He was going through chemo, and he was driving himself back from chemo. And my grandfather was a pro boxer, and he was also, like, a Russian farm boy. So he was, like, to me, to this day, he's the strongest human being I've ever met in my entire life. Physically, mentally, you name it, that's what he was, right? So this guy cut my grandfather off, my grandfather cut somebody off, I don't know, coming into his drive. So he's bringing in groceries, and as he's bringing in groceries, the guy's like, "Hey, you fucking asshole." And my grandfather's like, "What'd you say?" And he's like, "Hey, I guess this guy was like 40, and he's like, "Hey, you fucking asshole, you fucking cut me off," and stuff like that. "Fuck you," and blah, 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 blah. And so my grandfather looked around, and he saw a potting shovel that was in his garage, and he went after the guy with the potting shovel, grabbed him through the window, and started bludgeoning this guy this is 6 months before he died. He had cancer that had riddled everywhere, and it's like in his bones now at this time, and he beat the shit out of this guy, and he called me from Florida, and I was living in Michigan, and he's like, "Man, that felt good," you know? Right. But I remember going, like, when they said he's gonna die, Chuck, you need to come out. I remember going out there, and I remember, like, the cancer had riddled his vertebrae. So his vertebrae he had a neck brace on a cervical collar, and he was bedridden, and he couldn't get up. And I remember I was going through a tough time in my life, like you said. I was going through a tough time in my life and being a woe is me, you know, little bitch. Like, I was like, "You know, Grandpa, you know, this is going on, and my life happened like this, and, like, all this shit." And my grandfather was like, "You know, Chuck, just you being here makes all the difference in the world." You know, and then he looked at my grandmother, and I said, "How's your neck? Are you feeling all right? You still got a pain in the neck?" And he points at my grandmother, you know, so he kept a sense of humor. But, like, the strength that I saw through that, it's just, like, the physical strength and the mental strength from my grandfather was amazing. But the strength that I saw him when he fought that fucking disease, I can't really say it. And the other thing is, too, is, like, for people who don't know, like, you were talking about how, like, you were talking about how you had gastritis, and what happens is cancer, like, when you're taking chemo and radiation, the chemo and the radiation destroys fast multiplying cells. So the fast multiplying cells are usually in your stomach mucosa, in your esophagus, in your, in the rectum, all through. It's the same thing. The mouth, fast dividing cells. And so that's why a lot of these cancer patients tend to get, like, you know, esophagus problems, or, you know, problems with stool or whatnot. And it's just and I don't know what it's like, because I've never gone through it. Yeah. Corey, you have.
Yeah.
I mean, how is, I mean,
it's I guess I could say I was blessed in the sense that I managed it pretty well. I had terrible stomach pains or stomach indigestion. I still, to this day, thank you chemo. I had terrible hemorrhoids. That was awful. I never had a hemorrhoid. I mean, I was 20. I never had a hemorrhoid in my life. And I'm like, this is terrible. So now you don't want to eat. You don't want to, you know, poop or do anything. And I lost all my hair. I mean, did I feel kind of sick? The one thing that saved me, and I tell this to people too, is mashed potatoes. Anyone that's got to go through chemo, I always used to eat mashed potatoes to kind of line my stomach. I always felt like it kind of absorbed the chemo a little bit. And it's hard to eat sometimes. It's, you know, you don't want to eat. You feel sick. You kind of feel weird. You're just not quite yourself. I always try to persevere over that, but I know a lot of people struggle, and especially, I mean, I got lucky in the sense that I was 20 years old, so I kind of knew what was going on, and I wasn't like 60 or 70 where like my body was getting weak. Right. So I was in peak physical condition to fight it. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, not fun. I can tell you that.
Well, that's what my experience has been with people who've had cancer, and especially that are going through all the chemo and everything like that. It seems like those people are so much stronger than the people that are like surrounding them. I mean, the people that are surrounding them and supporting them have to be strong too.
Yep.
But how strong and like emotionally, mentally, people that, you know, are laying in that hospital bed, you know, yep, and facing this, like this fight every single day.
Right.
Like the unspoken things that, like, not everybody knows that, you know, like the fast dividing cells and what, like the full details that cancer, I mean, I'm sorry, that chemo does to you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing that, you know, people can be that strong and that, right, and persevere like that. Like Isa said, not just survive, but right, thrive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, some other things too that I was mouth sores, I guess you could go with. I know some people had them worse than me, and I talk to cancer patients all the time. That's just kind of my thing now is, and I kind of relate to those things. But it's never fun to go through that stuff. And kind of going back to your thing about my daughter is, I never want her to be as strong as I am, because you're only as strong as what you have to persevere through, right? So physically, like, you want to go and deadlift 700 pounds, you have to train yourself to do that. Mentally, physically, spiritually, all that stuff, you actually have to train yourself. Like going through cancer or watching someone pass away through cancer, you have to train yourself. You're training yourself as you're experiencing that stuff. Spiritually, people that are very spiritually strong go to church every week, or, you know, go to the priest, and they train themselves. And it's through experience. And, you know, I'm a very strong individual in all the aspects. Not that that's a good thing. I'm not saying that being a strong individual is a good thing. But all I'm trying to do now is pass that along to make other people strong. Because when you get hit with this thing, you're not strong at first. You have to train yourself to make yourself strong. So like I said, I was blessed in the weird sense that my cousin trained me. I was with him every single day, every single hour that he was sick for that month. Like I told my aunt, his Brett's mom, we believe that God needed an angel, so he took Brett because Brett was the perfect being. And then God needed to make an example, so he picked me because he knew, I don't know, maybe I'm a big enough asshole to go through it. But, you know, I'm trying to live that path now, is that make that example, build that strength, you know, that they pass that along. But yeah, I never want my daughter to be as strong as I am.
We never know how strong we can be until we have to be.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when I first started even lifting and stuff like that, 700-pound deadlift, not that that's the biggest thing. You know, we got guys lifting 1,000 pounds and all this crazy stuff. But, like, I used to think a 500-pound deadlift or a 400-pound deadlift was amazing. And all of a sudden, one day at a meet, I decided to go pull 7-Eleven, and I was like, whoa, I can do that. Not that I ever doubted myself when I was there, because I'm there. I'm physically, mentally strong. I knew I could do it. You just didn't know you could do it. You know what I mean? Just like cancer is, like, you don't think you can battle it. You don't think you can be there for that, like, that person that's sick next to you. I'll tell you what, it was harder for me to watch my cousin go through it than it was for me to go through it. Because me, it's just like, that's what I tell everyone now. It's like, I've been through chemo. Give me cancer again. I'd rather be me than my wife. I'd rather be me than my daughter. Just because, in the weird sense, it's not that I want it, but it's just the same sense that, like, I know what to do. You know what I mean? It might be terrible. And a good buddy of mine, Alex Berlin, he had the same type of cancer as me. I celebrated my 5-year anniversary of remission, which is a huge milestone, because if you make it to 5 years, you're basically, it's not coming back, most likely. And he celebrated his 1 year, or being in remission. He had the same type of cancer as me. And man, that kid is strong, mentally super strong, and his cancer came back. And when Ewing sarcoma comes back, they basically say, good luck. I mean, that's kind of what it's a matter of time. He's battling. He's out in New York right now, and shit, he's doing great. I mean, no cancer, no chemo, or no cancer, but he's going through a special trial. And God, I talked to him, and I'm like, you're stronger than me, way stronger than me. You know, going through that again, at least for me, when I was going through chemo, is like I had a timetable. I knew in November when treatment was done, I could be done with it. At least that's where I was. I mean, but when it comes back, like for him, it came back and it was like, hey, we don't have a timetable on you. We're just going to do this until, you know, whatever. And it's like, he's still positive as all get up and he's super strong. I mean, I thrive off him. I mean, you see some of my posts online and I sometimes don't call out names and things like that, but I'll go and lift, man. And some of my strongest lifts are when I'm thinking of like him or my other buddy's dad just passed away. I got really close with, he passed away from cancer a couple months back and I was lifting for him one day at the gym and I'm like, That's what drives me. It's like those guys, those strengths, those people that went through that, that provided all this strength to other people, you know, that's what keeps us going, you know. And
so I got so like you persevered and you saw your cousin pass and then you had cancer and you persevered. Does the little things not, like, little, like, agitations and stuff not mean so much, like, fucking waiting in line at a bank or, you know, like, you're getting stuck in traffic? I mean, does it give you a different perspective?
The one thing, waiting in line in traffic, I absolutely hate. those little things still irritate me. But when I think about the big picture of things, getting in a fight with my wife or doing the random stuff, it's just like, life's too short, you know, where you work, what you do, and taking trips and stuff like that. All that stuff to me is life's too short. Why are you waiting? You know, like not to say don't save for retirement and do all that stuff because I'm a very analytical guy, you know, but life's too short. I mean, the little things in the sense, the minor stuff. I mean, I can't say that I'm sitting in traffic and I'm like, well, I've been through a lot of shit, so right. This asshole in front of me is not pissing me off. It does
he's still pissing me off.
But, maybe it's the sense of, like, I'm not going to get out of my car and fight this guy because it's not worth it. You know, his day's probably worse. I always try to put myself in other people's shoes, too. It's like, maybe his daughter's battling cancer, and I don't know. Or maybe he just lost his job and things like that. So I always try to put things in perspective. Like, similar to what my cousin would always do is just try to understand people. That's what puts me in perspective is the human good's way better outweighs the evil, you know. And that's I've realized that in that sense.
You know, it's funny. I'm going through a divorce right now. And I tried to talk to my son about divorce. And I said, you know, is there anything I can maybe tell you about, like, you know, divorce that maybe you can, you know, that you need? And he goes, you know, Dad, he goes, you always told me to put myself in the situation of other people. He goes, I have a couple friends that have parents that are divorced. He said, so I always did that, so I kind of know how they feel.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty worldly for an 11-year-old.
Really?
And I guess it kind of ties that together.
Yeah.
I don't know, Corey. I just, like, we're all sitting here, and it, just so everybody knows that's listening, like, we're all trying to fight back tears through this. I mean, I'm not fighting them back because I'm fucking crying. I don't give a shit. You know, I'm strong enough to admit that. But I just, to go through what you did and to face your own mortality, too, I mean, if somebody has got cancer and they just get diagnosed with cancer and they just, like, you know, you just found out about it, What do you say to them?
I mean, it really depends on. I try to take it in on who they are and what they do, but you know, I start off always with my story and what I went through, you know, and life throws you some shit, you know, like I said with me and my cousin, and I should go play the lottery and win, you know, because we played the lottery and lost big time, but. Life's too short to be upset about it, you know. I think going back to the Alex thing is just like it's the mindset, and with the strength is I always try to put that mindset in people. It's like you can beat this, you know what I mean? Take it day by day or whatever you need to do. Like I said, take it individual by individual, but like you can beat this if you're mentally there. Don't give up, you know. It's not worth it to give up because cancer can't beat you. Even if you do pass away, like my cancer never beat my cousin. Yeah, he lost his battle, he lost his life, but he was never beaten. You know, he was the last moment. I'll tell this story just because, and hopefully I don't cry during this story. But this guy, I had finals the week that he had passed. I think it was finals or midterms or whatever it was, and I was in the hospital with him because he had he had to go in to because he couldn't breathe. You know, liquid was filling up his lungs. And they had him on, like, you know, the max, or, you know, he's on breathing and stuff like that. And I'm there with his mom and my girlfriend at the time. And me and Brett, he's known for, notorious for his hugs, right? He biggest hugger. People miss his hugs to date because he's one of the best huggers. Because he genuinely cared and he just squeezed the shit out of you. Me and him never hugged. We just had this bond that we just never did that stuff. We, see you later, man. We'd point. Man, that was fun. Da-da-da-da. Like, I can't remember the time that last time we hugged. Maybe when we were kids. I don't know. But I hung out with him all night that night, and I said, hey, I think it was getting a little bit late, like 8 or 9. And I was like, hey, man, I got finals or tests in the morning. I got to go home and study. He goes, hey, don't worry about it. It's all good. And I go to walk out the door, and he goes, hey, come here. And I was like, kind of taken back. I'm like, why? You know, what are you doing? And he stood up out of the bed, came over to me, gave me a huge hug, squeezed me, whispered in my ear and said, I love you. And that was it. That's the last words he told me. And that's why I believe he knew. Because that night he got put in the ICU. He never said another word to me. And I mean, who does that? How do you know? And that's what makes me believe that there's a greater good out there. Whatever it is that you can be better. I mean, we can all be better. And I always think back to that. I always, you know, and like, you know, you said, you know, I try to stay strong for a lot of things, and I've been through a lot in my life. But I'll tell you what, I'll be driving in my car. If I'm alone listening to music or whatever, some random song, or I'll start thinking about Brett or whatever we've been through, I'll start crying. I'll just start bawling. And it's like, sometimes that's good. I think it's a good release too, but
cathartic.
But man, I don't even know what I was talking. I don't even know how I got on that story, but he, that guy showed me everything, you know, like I said, he was my idol, and he put strength in me. And that's what we're trying to do with Foundation for Strength, is provide strength for others. And that's what we do, is we put on, events, fundraisers and events. We're going to do the golf outing every year, which is the weekend after, Memorial Day every year. We're going to do a bullying fundraiser probably in the early part of the year. We're going to do maybe some food fundraisers, and who knows, maybe I'll come up with something with Shane and things like that. But the big event coming up, and hopefully you guys can all make it, it's going to be a blast. We're going to do a charity ball late November, Saturday, locally. Red carpet, you guys dress to the T's. Hopefully you guys can find a suit that fits, you know. And it's going to be a blast, you know. And the whole point is to, we're going to try to recap the year, show everyone what we've done, and hopefully kind of push out more, you know, hey, we've got more events coming, more people to help, and that's the real key to it all.
Is that event online somewhere already, or is it still in the planning stages?
We're still planning it. It'll be posted on all our social media, so again, follow us. And it's always on our website. We're going to be posting all our events coming up. Very excited about them. Again, I'm very excited the next coming weeks. We got some awesome warriors we're going to help. Hopefully I can put together some good videos. There's a video out there of our golf outing. It's pretty cool. My buddy does drone footage, and it's pretty fun, pretty cool. So I'm going to try to get them out for more drone footage if we can do some cool things. But that's the big thing, is some of these families, man. You know, I talk to the parents, and I say, hey, we want to do this for you. And, you know, they tell you, like, I didn't break down, and I'm breaking down today because you just told me this thing, or you guys want to do this for me, or, you know, you've just hit a nerve. And it's those things that just make me keep going. You know, it's like nothing better than providing more strength for people.
What we want to do, Corey, is, like, whenever you have something going on,
yeah,
contact Shane, contact me, contact whoever, and we're going to talk about it each and every single time on the air. There's not going to be a time that goes by that, like, you have either an outing or there's some sort of, like, charity work or whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah.
We want to be connected with it, because if we can just get one or two people to help and just a little bit extra money, that's what we want. Yeah. And I know people want to contribute and people want to help, but they just don't know how. Well, let's fucking let them know how.
Right. So. And that's what I was just going to say, is Corey's kind of, you know, was doing this when we did Relentless 2015. Like, I was seeing him, like, he was going out, contacting everybody, hitting everybody, and people want to donate. Like you said, people want to do this, but a lot of people don't have the avenue to do it, don't know how to do it. And I've even got, not patting myself on the back, but messages through Facebook, through the stuff that I do, from guys, you know, strongman, powerlifters, saying, hey, I love what you're doing. that made me want to do something, so I just started something in my community doing, and it's really, really makes you feel good. Like, you know, maybe all these little things we're doing are really making a difference.
Shane, maybe you can tell about your grandmother. You talked about your grandmother a couple times, and you talked about how that made you want to give back.
Yeah, well, kind of similar story with Corey and his cousin, but my grandmother was going through lung cancer that metastasized into pretty much was riddled with it. But she, one of her last things she did was got up and walked to the bathroom after eating ice chips for 5 or 6 days because she had so much dignity she refused to go in a diaper. She wouldn't put a diaper on, wouldn't, like, absolutely refuse. Was pretty much nonverbal, but, you know, would give the hand signals, nope, won't put a diaper on. And we were all there when she passed away, and she got up, it was 4 in the morning, got up to walk to the bathroom, and I remember the nurse saying, do you understand how much strength that took for, you know, I think she was 73 pounds or something when she passed away. She whittled down, and she said, do you understand the strength it took to, and that's something that's always in the back of my head, like, you know, we don't know how strong we are until, like you said, something like that we're face to face with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, too, is, like, now hearing that story is, like, how much stronger did it make you? And you didn't even go through it. But just, like, your dad, you know, it's, or your grandpa, you know, like, what he went through and how strong he was. When you see people go through it, and even if you're not related or anything like that, you see people battle these terrible battles. Like I said, they make you stronger. You know what I mean? You're not battling it, but they are. And I've seen some kids, man, with the most spunk in the world, some of the kids we've helped in cancer teas in the past. And it's like, man, this is awesome. I mean, the kid might not even know what's going on, but he's bald, running around, like, doing all this stuff, making jokes, making fun of me, and I'm just like, this is awesome. You know what I mean? Like
no complaint.
Yeah, right.
And another one, here I go with stories, but another one of my favorite stories is we were doing a hybrid strongman Highland Games event down in Trenton probably 4 years ago or so, and Alicia had just finished her chemotherapy. Her and her mom came out to watch our event, and Alicia came up, like you said, just spunky as can be and laughing, and she wanted to ride the rides. It was during the Trenton street fair, and she took Mason on a bunch of rides, and, like I said, gave hugs, she's, you know, talking to everybody. And then as she left with Mason to go ride the rides, Candy, her mom, said, we found out last night that her tumor actually grew after going through. So she went through chemo, they told her you're all done with chemo, and then, you know, your tumor grew, you got to go back through 12 weeks. So she found out the night before, comes out to my event the next morning just happy as can. And I remember our first event was a circus dumbbell, and there's a picture of me pressing it with sunglasses on with tears coming, just because I'm like, what the hell, who's this 15 year old kid running around happy as can be after getting the worst news in the world? So
makes you want to lift. You know, those are the things, like, when I was lifting for the kids and stuff like that, it's like, I know I can do it. And in fundraising, too, it's just like, when you ask somebody to donate $10, it's no big deal to them. But it's the world, you know, when you get $10 from 100 people, it's like, oh, my God, like, we just changed somebody's life. Or gave them the strength to persevere. Like, maybe this kid was in the dumps, or this person was in the dumps, and we bought him a new pair of shoes even. I mean, some of the simplest stuff that we've given people.
And somebody shows value in them. Somebody shows, like, interest in them. Somebody shows that they care about them.
Right.
And just that little bit of, like, it's like they've done studies on kids that have, like, been from third world countries where they don't have attention and affection and whatever, and the outcomes are always poor for them, so, like, psychosocially.
Right.
But then you see, like, a poor kid, a kid that has nothing but has love, like, they fucking come out, and
right,
they come out all right.
Yep.
You know, and it doesn't matter because they're loved. But just that little bit of outpouring of, like, caring for somebody, I mean, like you said, it helps them tremendously,
yep,
but it helps you even more.
Yep.
I mean, shit,
yeah.
I'm crying like a bitch.
Yeah, I was wondering, is Scott going to be able to do something to...
He's going to have to edit this.
Fix our cracking voices and...
make us sound like all hard and shit. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I guess one more thing, too, is going to the fundraising thing. And if there's anyone out there that needs help with fundraisers, I put on so many fundraisers in the past. And the point of Foundation for Strength is to help you guys put fundraisers on. no matter how big or how little, or if you guys got the power, you know, this is a powerlifting strength type power podcast. If you guys want to do some kind of event or anything like that, we're more than willing to help. I know Shane would probably jump in and help too, but we're a nonprofit charity. So if you funnel things through us, everything could be tax deductible as well. And we can work with you to try to help the people you want to help too. That's the whole point, is collaboration is key. The more people that we work together with, the more people we can help.
Real quick, Corey, what do you do for a living? I'm curious. We didn't touch that. What do you do for an actual living?
So I work at a Ford Motor Company. I work under the Global Data Insights and Analytics skill team, which is a new skill team out there. Yeah. Right. I'm a nerd. But I do data acquisition out there. So I work with third-party vendors acquiring data and things like that, you know, with the world around us. You kind of got to be a nerd. You know, it pays well, you know, so...
Yeah.
So,
Corey, I think we're going to cut this. We'd love to have you back on at any time that you feel like it. Like, you know, this being like your secondary or tertiary gym or whatever. But we'd love to have you back on. And like I said, each and every time that you have like a fundraiser or something going on, come back on, talk about it.
Yeah.
Even if it's 5, 10, if it's for fucking 3 hours, I don't care. Just like come back on and let people know how to contribute. Let people know what to do. And I can't tell you how much, like, I appreciate, or we all appreciate you not only telling your story, but showing valid emotion. And, like, I don't know, like, it touched each and every one of us today. Like, there's not a dry eye here. So I just can't tell you how much I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, no problem. It was a pleasure.
So for Isa and for Shane and for Mike and myself, thank you, Corey Allen, for coming in. And we're going to hear more from you. Thank you for listening. It's time to take a chance.